with calm surrender to the rush of day. When the heat of a rolling wave can't be turned away, an enchanted moment, and it sees me through. It's enough for this restless warrior just to be with you. And can you feel the love tonight? It is where we are. It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to Galactic Roundtable. This is Beth. I'm so happy to be here with you tonight. What's new? We had scheduled for March 31st to take on the Congressional Hearings Initiative in Washington, D.C., and that got postponed. Whatever's going on is being worked out. So in order for us to be prepared, I thought it would be great if we could listen to this interview with Stephen Bassett as he describes to us exactly what is the Congressional Hearing Initiative. Enjoy this. Thank you.
Theo, I'm here with Stephen Bassett. He's here this time to give us some updates on what's going on. Last time we spoke with him was after the citizen hearing. So, Stephen, welcome back to First Contact Radio. How are you today, and what's going on in the world of the truth embargo?
Well, it's good to be with you, Josh, as always. As you said, the last time we spoke, we talked about the citizen hearing on disclosure in Washington at the National Press Club. is the info on that is at citizenhearing.org. That's singular, citizenhearing.org. We accomplished the principal goal, which is to get this done and get it filmed. We've got 30 hours of it on high definition film, and we're editing that now into a 10 DVD set. And we webcast it to the world so people in media and on the Hill, Capitol Hill, could watch it, even though they could not come and attend, right? Can't be associated with the issue and all that. So we gave it some exposure there, got some reasonably good media coverage, quite a few articles. So what's going to happen next is we're going to take that citizen hearing on disclosure to Capitol Hill. And it's a pretty simple maneuver. The concept is this, that the reason that there have not been hearings on the ET issues since 68, when there was a one-day event. I don't know if it was all day, but it was no more than a day. I think there were five people that testified, and some papers were submitted. The people that testified were quite serious about the issue. I do not think the hearing was serious. I think it was part of a shutdown process that was underway, where the government was trying to get out from under the public pressure on the issue. Okay. So they held a hearing, let some people come in so they could say they'd done that. They shortly after that, the Condon Report was issued, and saying that there's nothing to this. They used the Condon Report to shut down Blue Book, saying, okay, that's it, we don't need to study this anymore. And then at the same time, they were closing down NICAP. They had thrown Keogh out, and there were actually some CIA people on the board, and they essentially took over NICAP, shut down all its operations, kept all the money for themselves, and NICAP disappeared. So this was their attempt to get out from under the issue in 68, 69. It worked for about 9 years or so. Things really cooled in terms of people pounding on the government's door. And then that started to change dramatically in 1978 when Jesse Marcel Sr. interviewed with Stan Friedman. And it's been pretty much all downhill for the truth embargo since. So what's the point here? The point is that since 1968, the evidence is amassed, the witnesses have come forward, books have been written, sightings have taken place, the internet has come into creation, massive amount of information is being dispersed, awareness of the subject is almost universal. And yet the Congress hasn't held hearings, and the reason is quite simple. The people inside the government that are in the know on this subject, and even managing the subject, are fully aware that if the kinds of witnesses that are currently available were to testify on the Hill to Senate or House committees at length, not some show thing where they just a couple people show up, the truth embargo would not survive it. These hearings would be extensively covered. There'd be a lot of cameras in the room. The media would be covering it intensely. And what they would see happen is what we demonstrated would happen with the citizen hearing on disclosure in D.C. We had 40 witnesses, strong witnesses, 10 countries, testified in 20 sessions, 21.5-hour sessions over 5 days, 30 hours, to six former members of Congress, three Republicans, two Democrats, and three Democrats, two Republicans, and a Libertarian, five Congress people and one senator, who were relatively neutral on the subject, and they virtually were blown away by the testimony, as is to be expected. And they showed that transition on camera quite emphatically. It's never been done before. It was the highest concentration of evidence ever presented one time, one place. And we have it all on film. What we intend to do is to essentially launch the most intensive, comprehensive effort to get hearings in Congress ever. And if we get them, and I think we will, the same witnesses, and very likely others, equally important, that were not at the citizen hearing, but will be more than happy to testify on the Hill, to Congress, will present to real congressional committees, in some cases as many as 20 members per committee, and that will end the truth embargo.
Okay.
So that's what's coming. Now, how are we going to do it? It's actually not complicated, and the public can play a critical role. In early January, depending upon when we, it's based on when we complete the editing, this huge editing project, which we are raising funds for at citizenhearing.org. There's a funding campaign there you can check out. We're trying to raise money to get this done quickly, so we get, you know, we need to get more editors on this. When that's done, we will deliver 535 sets of the DVDs to the entire House and Senate, which will be about 5,350 discs. That will be sent on a particular day, and it will take about 7 days for those DVDs to arrive in those offices, which contain about 1,000 staffers. So you have 1,000 staffers with 1,000 computers, with 1,000 DVD players, and they're about to get 5,350 DVDs of an unprecedented event showing former colleagues of theirs listening to key testimony on the ET issue, testimony that essentially confirms ET presence. The DVDs will be accompanied by a letter signed by many, many witnesses requesting that they meet with PRG, Paradigm Research Group's lobbyist, me, to discuss the content of the DVDs they just got, and to and also calling for hearings immediately.
Okay.
So that'll be on its way, and there will be a lot of publicity leading up to that, so that the Congress is going to know those DVDs are coming. But while they're in transit, I'm going to go on national radio television and ask every American who is listening to take a couple of minutes, just a couple of minutes of their time, and send a tweet, and of course we will provide all the Twitter addresses, or an email, and it's easy to get this information, and we'll set up the links for them, to their two senators and congressperson. It's three representatives that represent them in Congress, requesting that they meet with PRG's lobbyists, and also that they hold hearings. And we'll ask them to do it in a very concentrated time frame, which will be like the days leading up to the arrival of those DVDs and the days after. So we hope to generate thousands of tweets. It's called a tweet storm, by the way, and a lot of emails, which usually using email forms. They don't give out email addresses much anymore. You have to go to their site, and you have to send it in on their email forms, which is fine. It's the same deal. They'll be getting all these in numbers large enough that they can't ignore them. And then the DVDs will run.
And sounds
so
great.
We're going to do everything we can to make sure these staffers start looking at these DVDs. And then shortly after that, I'll be knocking on their door.
Okay.
You know who we're going to approach first. We're just going to start going down the list to get meetings. Not too long after that, we will be sending letters to the key committee chairs. And these letters are going to be signed by former members of Congress and maybe some other political notables, requesting that the chairs convene the meetings. And we're doing this while we're trying to get members of the committees to make a decision to approach the chairpersons and request that these hearings take place. Then I will publish a list of all of the offices that are declining to meet, and we'll go back to the public and say, look, now we want you to contact all of these offices, whether they're your representative or not, tweet and email them, and basically, politely request that they reconsider their decision to not meet on this subject. Meanwhile, there will be press, you know, releases being sent out. So there's not going to be too many people, I think, in the country that won't know within, say, 30 days of the launch Congress as being significantly, approached.
Challenged,
that's a good word. Significantly challenged to finally hold hearings for a large number of military agency political witnesses, many of which had substantial security clearances and have profound evidence.
That's a very well thought out plan.
Well, yeah, given I've been working on it for about 16 years, so yeah, probably well thought out by now.
Well organized, very well thought out. So good job on that.
Yeah, it is really, you know, we need funding. I mean, we were trying to raise funding at paradigmresearchgroup.org. There's a very clear link to the funding modalities there, both WePay and PayPal, so that we have the funds for me to operate extensively in Washington. I mean, I say on the Hill for at least 3 months. Hopefully, we can get some support there. But whatever, I mean, even with little money, theoretically, I can do everything that needs to be done. And if it works, then the hearings will take place sometime, probably in March. There's no question we can deliver the witnesses, not an iota of doubt there. And these witnesses will be every bit as powerful as the witnesses in the citizen hearing, many of which will be the same. And the media will do its thing, and that'll be that. We anticipate that there'll literally be a media frenzy generated by these hearings that will force the president to cut a deal with the military intelligence groups and make the announcement. That is the game plan. But key to it is the public participation. We're going to ask them to take a couple of minutes to send a tweet and an email. Now, a couple of tweets, a couple of emails, obviously, because there's three representatives for every American. And if the public's willing to take those few minutes, it's going to be hard for them to ignore. And then, you know, if I get the meetings, in other words, you know, for those members who are, you know, working more on behalf of their constituents and the American people than they are in their own self-interest, agree to meet, whether it's a high-level staff or the member themselves, and I'm allowed to get in front of them. And essentially make a case, certainly accompanied by either they or their staff reviewing some of the, you know, the CHD, the citizen hearing disclosure content. I think that we can persuade the some of these members to act. And there are a couple of reasons why they will, I think, respond. One is that, you know, the fact is that the hearing is a very, very safe process for them. We're not asking them to come forward and make some pronouncement about their beliefs on the ET issue. All we're asking them to do is to call a hearing for the committee that they sit on and allow the witnesses to come in and testify under oath, and they just sit there and listen. And they can ask the question, odd question, if they want to. So they're not being asked to join up. They're simply being asked to do their job, and they'll be doing it as a committee, and which means that there's 15, 20 of them in some cases. So it's not like anyone will be singled out by the media to be ridiculed in the standard fashion that the truth embargo allows. So it's really not difficult for them or particularly that risky. A little bit more risky for the committee chair, I suppose, that has to sign off on it. And secondly, this is, and, you know, definitely a factor, and one of the reasons that we're making this move is that, for a whole lot of reasons, the U.S. Congress right now is probably at its nadir. It's as bad as it's ever been. I mean, there are a lot of people saying it's the worst Congress in history. Its approval ratings are the worst that have ever been recorded. It's the subject of ongoing daily jokes by the usual satirists and talk show hosts, comedians. I mean, who wants to go to work every day for a company or an institution that's getting pounded like that? And more importantly, who wants to have to go out campaign relentlessly to raise millions of dollars so they can get reelected to that same place. I mean, this is not good for any of them. So I think that we've got a strong case to make that they've got nowhere to go but up.
Right.
And that the way up, really, and it's not hard to see this, well, it's going to require them to, one, take on a major issue that has impact. Globally would be even better, which this does. And it needs to be an issue that is clearly nonpartisan, so that there's very little likelihood that the hearings and the engagement by Congress will decay, as it often does, into a hyper-partisan blatherfest, which just insults everyone's intelligence and just makes people hate them more. Well, this issue is it. I mean, it's completely nonpartisan, and it's profoundly important. So I'm saying this is your way up, guys and gals. You hold these hearings. Watch how fast your approval ratings go up. So this is part of the timing and why we're doing it. It's very notable that for whatever reason, and I'm bemused by this, I think it may just be a coincidence, but it may not be. The House Space Science and Technology Committee on the 4th of December held a 1.5-hour hearing for 3 witnesses to testify about astrobiology and kind of the latest efforts to assess and determine our ability to identify life outside the planet, really meaning microbial life, nice, safe little microbes. Most important probably testimony at this hearing was that one of the astrobiologists, Sarah, brought into play the latest planetary census material. She way understated the life planets, potential life planets that are out there, which are now recognized as potentially in the billions, tens of billions. Which kind of makes the point that the idea of life being only on the Earth is now becoming absurdity, very much the same way that the idea of the Earth being flat became an absurdity. The universe just appears empty and the Earth just appears flat. But what was most notable, in my view, of this particular hearing on the 4th was, one, is that everybody got along. The Republicans and the Democrats got along just fine, and they asked some questions and made the odd joke, but it was perfectly fine, which is to be expected. There's just no partisan angle here that they can use to beat each other up on. And secondly, which was quite notable, was not – there weren't many cameras there. I mean, it was filmed, and you can find it on YouTube, Congressional Hearing Astrobiology. But there was a huge number of articles written about it around the world. I mean, it was substantially written up. And that's just a little astrobiology.
Right.
Just imagine the write-ups and the coverage if 30 witnesses were, many of which were Air Force officers and military officers with security clearances, were going to be appearing on the Hill to discuss their engagement and information about extraterrestrial, potential if not definite extraterrestrial activities and phenomena. Just imagine that.
Okay, well, something like that would certainly get a lot of attention. It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't, based on the responses of those that had an opportunity already to hear the presentations at the citizen hearing. They all changed from when they went in to the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that would only spread. The numbers are with you, too. So the odds are with you. So that's good. That's very good. Now, out of that, there was talk about taking this to an international level last time, correct?
Yes, indeed. We are going to be simultaneously pursuing an international approach. And this is going to be done through a new entity that has just been set up. a 501c3 nonprofit called the Citizen Hearing Foundation. The website is up at citizenhearingfoundation.org. That's singular, citizenhearingfoundation.org. This was a request made by the committee that sat in hearing on the citizen hearing, the former members of Congress, who felt that the UN needed to be engaged, which is true. The UN was last engaged on this issue in 1978, when a resolution was submitted that to the General Assembly, it was passed to set up a commission to, quote, address the UFO issue, which is what it was called then. That commission, of course, didn't do anything because it was 1978, and the Security Council members, headed by the U.S., was not going to allow the UN to get in, muck around on the ET issue during the Cold War. So it did nothing. But clearly, this is a subject that the UN ought to be dealing with. So we, at their request, set up the foundation so that we could accept tax-deductible contributions to pursue a joint resolution, hopefully a joint resolution, multi-nation joint resolution, to the General Assembly, which has to come in from the countries and their UN ambassadors, the UN representatives, for a UN back world conference. And we already have 9 board advisors on the board. We'll have probably 20 fairly soon. We'll have advisors operating out of all of the countries that we're going to initially focus on.
Okay.
And the funds will cover the cost of their pursuing the contacts with their executive branch, media, and so forth to develop the interest in that country to consider being part of this resolution. And a joint resolution means that more than one country's UN representatives agree on a language, and they submit it together. Now, the fact is that a single country could do this, and if the country was a fairly substantial country, were to submit a resolution, it would get sufficient attention that it could very well pass. But we're going to initiate the process as a joint resolution process. And we'll, with those funds, we'll set up an office in New York near the UN, and we'll get this underway. So that's the Citizen Hearing Foundation. You can see the communique that made this request by the former committee members. You can see other stuff there at citizenhearingfoundation.org. Here we're hoping a major funder will step forward, an individual who can put in a couple hundred thousand, get the tax deduction, and allow us to operate fast, move quickly. Also, a substantial contribution would legitimize the foundation and make it much more likely that others would do matching funds. So it's pretty likely that the Congressional Hearing Initiative will be operating side by side with the International Initiative into the UN, which is going to they'll reinforce each other. And the idea, so we have the basis to attracting both national press and then international media into the issue simultaneously. We're trying to create a synergism there, and that will again bring the issue further out into the public perception and generate a sense of action and urgency. So this is going to happen too.
Very good. All right. So I'm looking at the petition at avaaz.org. And this is the petition that is in regards to this, what we're just talking about, this international movement now?
Well, yeah, there are a number of petitions that turn up here and there on the web. The web is a very easy way to do petitions. And this is one. FAS.org has got one up there. Just been gathering signatures. So I publicize it. It's It's not a PRP petition, but it's there.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was one of you.
No, but it's cool to have people do that. I published that. Now, PRG's petitions, though, are not just, they're not done just to have a petition. They are all about the White House. And so, as part of our initiatives right now, we have the Disclosure Petition Initiative, and that started back in September of 2011. We submitted 5 disclosure petitions to the White House, and the 6th, which will, not surprisingly, be about the Congressional Hearing Initiative, will go up on the White House website in January. And that's what's important here, and not on some petition site like Avaaz or Change.org, which is fine, but the White House website. And that's the We the People project that they're still running 2 years on now. And this petition will remain up for 30 days. In order for it to get a response from the White House and remain up permanently, it has to get now 100,000 signatures. And I'm not going to invest the resources to promote it to the point where it can get that many signatures. It's just too difficult. But we'll get signatures, and it'll be up in 30 days. And obviously available for the media and everyone else to go see. But these petitions are important because everyone was up on the White House website for at least 30 days. But the first one, which you can find at disclosurepetition.org, the first one was a game changer. It went up on September the 22nd. It got the necessary signatures very quickly to get a response from the White House. That response came on October the 4th, and you can find that response at disclosurepetition.org as well. And that response was key to this ongoing advocacy process now, leading, I think, to the end of the truth embargo. The White House responded that there was no evidence at all for the ET presence, or that even life outside the planet, or that the government was hiding anything, which is rather remarkable. All false, of course, and patently false and indefensibly false. But and that's fine. You say, okay, fine, the government lies. But what's important is this is in writing. It's the first time in history that the executive branch of the U.S. government has ever put its position in writing. And that's important because now it's fixed. It's policy. More importantly, it's still up on the website. It's the policy of the Obama administration, and sitting on their website has been for 2 years. Now, obviously, so we have a fixed target. So what we do is just piling the evidence on top of itself and shoving that evidence out in front of the political media, showing that, well, here's all the evidence the White House officially states doesn't exist. Doesn't that trouble you? And, of course, nothing did that more than the citizen hearing on disclosure, where we put 30 hours of testimony in front of the media. So at some point, the media is going to have to decide, what are they going to do about the fact that the official position of the White House is this, these 3 statements, and it's clearly obvious from the evidence that those statements are all false. Now, the truth embargo, under the truth embargo, as things are, you know, the sort of the institutionalized reality of the truth embargo, they're not supposed to do anything, which has unfortunately become a pattern with respect to a lot of things, not just UFO-related or ET-related. So the government does something, and the media sort of knows, well, we're not going to do anything about that. And all sorts of mischief ensues. But that written position was a gift to us. I even wonder to this day if it wasn't intentional that the White House, which is still incapable of taking action on this because they don't have the cooperation of the military intelligence managers on this, was saying, well, really can't say anything positive and really can't take any action, but here's a gift. We'll put an absolutist position in writing that we know you can shred. If that's true, it was brilliance. Absolute genius. Maybe one day we'll know. But either way, we are shredding it. And of course, the hearings on the congressional hearings will completely demolish it. And so the day those hearings start, you can be sure that Paradigm Research Group is going to make it crystal clear to every news operation in the country. The White House has stated a position. There's no evidence whatsoever, and all of that evidence is about to come out in congressional hearings from dozens of high-level witnesses. If that doesn't get the media going, I can't imagine what would get them going. So that's the plan. It's very straightforward.
Okay. Now, all of this, you have the footage from the hearings. Is that going to stand on its own, or is that all part of this Truth Embargo movie?
No. All of the citizen hearing material is its own material.
Okay.
DVD sets are going to be sold worldwide, hopefully generating some income so we can do more stuff. But they will be delivered gratis. We wouldn't want the members of Congress to spend any of their own money on them.
Right.
It'll be gratis to the 500. We'll also probably almost certainly send the sets to about 100 UN ambassadors, UN ambassadors from 100 countries, and U.S. ambassadors from 100 countries. So it'll be a total of about 735 sets will be sent out
to
officials. We'll be selling them. The Truth Embargo movie documentary is separate. Now, that's developing at the website truthembargomovie.com. It's still in development, early development. We have a lot of work to do there. More filming to do. We need to raise about $250,000, so we have a crowdfunding campaign with incentives for people to help support the movie now. We're hoping people will catch on there, and that's, you can find that easily at truthembargomovie.com. The documentary is also part of the process. It's going to be an effort to, and you'll be hearing more about this, try to create a personal narrative, some personal narratives and threads that will communicate the concept of the Truth Embargo and the disclosure movement to the people in a way that they can, you know, they can connect with, right? As opposed to just a bunch of talking heads just giving out data points and, you know, little clips and things. We're going to try to create something that's different. We're going to do our best to make it good enough for the theaters. And if we continue to get good funding, that will help us to drive a distribution deal. Making a film is hard, but getting distribution may even be harder. It's a brutal arena. And if you don't have some chips, if you don't have some leverage on your side, you're just at the mercy of people that absolutely don't care what's in the movie. So we want to get this in the theaters. I can't guarantee it. There's obviously plenty of ways to distribute a film now. That's all changing every day, and that's great, and we're happy. But I want it in the theaters because that, you know, theatrical distribution gives it a good deal of gravitas in the mind of the people. It gives it the appropriate, I think, degree of consideration that an issue of this magnitude deserves. And it's very notable. There may be one exception to this way back that I almost don't count. I just don't think it's in the genre. But it's very interesting to note that the extraterrestrial alien thing is the single highest grossing genre in the history of film.
Right.
I know this because I researched it. About 300 plus movies with ETs or aliens in them, in one way or another, including animation, have been made since 1950, as well as scores of television shows, series. And I've given a reasonable estimate that in 2013 dollars, the amount of revenues that the films generated through ticket sales, product sales, DVD sales, plus the ad revenues generated from the television series, is somewhere in the range of $75 billion that went into the entertainment industry. And as we know, the highest grossing movie in history, right, And there will soon be, by the way, at least two more of them that are starting early production. Two sequels are being created at the same time, which is interesting, is, of course, Avatar. And for those that have forgotten, may have forgotten, Avatar was about extraterrestrials. And Avatar generated $2.78 billion in world ticket sales. That said, not a single documentary addressing the extraterrestrial issue, and there have been hundreds, has ever been given theatrical distribution. Odd, isn't it?
It is very odd.
You would think that, hey, right, the subject obviously has massive appeal. Documentaries cost very little. You know, so we could, you know, create a documentary. We could buy a documentary for $1 million, $2 million bucks. And put it in theaters, and even though I generated $20 million, I guess we're doing pretty well, aren't we? Nope, haven't done it. I want to break that barrier. And if we get the public behind this documentary, Truth Embargo, we get some funding from some people, and we get some support, we'll make it, we'll make it well, and we'll get it into theaters so that the world can go to the big screen and see a big issue.
Right. That would be the place for it to be.
Mm-hmm. We think the door is there to open. The stars have aligned. The timing is right. And it can be done. So we're doing that. Now, I can mention that while we're getting that together, I invite people to also maybe participate elsewhere to pad it out a little bit. And there's a number of things they can do. For one thing, and I'll be sending out a substantial update on this soon. And by the way, if people want to receive the updates about PRG's work, they need to email a subscription request to, it's free, to PRG at paradigmresearchgroup.org. And of course, that contact information is on the website in many places. But I would invite people to go to World Disclosure Day, worlddisclosureday.org, and endorse it. And this is the day that PRG is promoting as July the 8th to be, you know, the day that people can focus, maybe build events around, and to draw attention to the disclosure advocacy movement.
Okay.
I invite people to go to exopoliticsworld.net, exopoliticsworld.net, and consider, if you are interested in the subject and knowledgeable and also webmaster, setting up a website for your country. We'd like to get about 100 countries with at least one portal website. We have, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 now. But we're looking for volunteer webmasters that will acquire the domain, the appropriate domain, and create and manage a site for as many countries as possible. We're also looking for people to do the same at exopoliticsunitedstates.net, where we're trying to get as many states to have at least one portal site, exopoliticsmissouri, exopoliticsflorida.net, and so forth, operate. So we're looking for people to volunteer to do that. And also, I'd like to get PRG's Political Action Committee going again. This is x-ppac.org, XPAC, x-ppac.org. That's the Political Action Committee for PRG. If we can get funding going into that, the intention is that next year the Political Action Committee will offer contributions to any congressional candidate, either party, that is willing to call for congressional hearings during their campaign on the ET issue. If they're willing to do that, we'll send them some money. So if people would like to get involved at XPAC, fund it, we'll be able to throw that. And it's, you know, the amount of money that you give is not a great deal, but it's a great media attention to the issue. So faculty like to get that in play. And then there's another site called factsonwashington.org. Washington.org is the one of the places we're going to be orchestrating the Twitter campaigns and the email campaigns. There'll be others, but and this is where we'll provide the key information where people can quickly identify their contact information for their congressional representatives, and also the tweet tags and all that. We invite people to go there and pay attention, factsonwashington.org. There's some others. Let me see. Some other stuff that we're involved in here that could be useful. Oh, yeah. Now, we have a substantial Facebook presence. So, obviously, ParadigmResearchGroup.org has a page. Citizen Hearing on Disclosure has a Facebook page. Exopolitics World Network has a Facebook page. We certainly invite people to go and join these pages. Either join the group or like the page and contribute. So again, that would be useful. And I've got a Facebook page as well, but unfortunately, I'm maxed out at the 5,000 limit. Really, it's almost impossible now to add anybody. So this is kind of the full package of things going on, and the more people that get involved with all of these, the more presence it has, and that's useful. Because the media, what happens is we generate media. The media will then go check out these pages, and they will see the level of interest, and that's important. We haven't held an X conference. I don't expect, x-conference.com is the website for that. We held six of them. I don't expect to hold another one until after disclosure, but after disclosure, we will definitely hold another X conference or two. And then, of course, as I mentioned, disclosurepetition.org is where the We the People petitions are housed. You can see the past ones. And of course, you can link to the current, the initial one, which is still up on the White House website. So we like people to visit there. This is sort of the full scope right now of PRG's activist work. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
The only thing that's really limiting how much these do is funding. Funding is brutally difficult to get. It's remarkable how many people in this country are very, very wealthy, who really know the ET issue is real. We know that they know the ET issue is, but they won't fund it because they're still under the illusion that the truth embargo would hurt them, that they would be harmed, that they would be embarrassed, and by and large, other than the odd joke from the odd, ill-informed person, they would be on the right side of history. So there have been a few that have done step forward, certainly the backer of the Truth Embargo movie and CitizenHearing.org did. But he was Canadian. We still haven't gotten an American to come in anywhere near that level. But then the Americans have been bombarded with the Truth Embargo's propaganda forever. I mean, since they were born, right? I mean, it goes back to the 40s, late 40s.
Right.
So there's this, it's successful. One of the most interesting things, and we can probably finish up on this, one of the most interesting things I'm looking for as we move towards the congressional hearing campaign and initiate it is there. I think people in the government in the know on this subject who are part of the management of the ET subject, who I think fully aware that the Truth Embargo ends if the hearings on the Hill are held, not some 2-hour. Token hearing, but I mean the real deal.
Right.
It's raining Air Force officers with security clearances. And they know that's it. And so, on that basis, these hearings cannot be held. And so, they, if in fact their position, and they have, and they're holding sway on the policy, their position will be that we have to block this. It cannot be allowed to take place. And so I'm going to be watching very carefully for any and everything that might indicate that a move to block is underway.
Okay.
And it could come from any number of directions. I mean, there's so many ways that you could try to play that, make that move. On the flip side, however, if no effort is made to block, that would be a crystal clear indicator that the position of the insiders is one of let it be, meaning, you know, we would probably prefer that disclosure was held off, but we're not gonna stop the process. If they can get the hearings and the hearings go where they go, then that will be it. And that would be a very significant thing to know. If that's where the government's position is, that would just confirm that we're just about at the end of the race. So this is going to be a significant test.
Yes,
probably the greatest
like
test so far of the government's commitment to truth embargo post-World War II. I mean, post-Cold War, rather. So all of this, you know, is going to unfold in the next 60 days. I'm excited and eager to get going, and we hope that as much support as possible will turn up from American people who go to these websites to see what we're doing. TruthEmbargoMovie.com, ParadigmResearchGroup.org, CitizenHearing.org.
Thank you very much, Stephen, for being on the...
I think that covers it, everybody. Hopefully that answered all your questions of what's coming now. Thank you for being here with me tonight. Thank you for all your support and all that you do. Have a wonderful week, and I'll catch you in the morning with Bob Charles. Namaste.
Time. Here's why. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you.